you're a little bit racist.
Well, you're a little bit too.
I guess we're both a little bit racist.
Admitting it is not an easy thing to do.
But I guess...
Is everybody a racist? That title on an essay written by our guest this hour caught our attention, and we will talk with her about it this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, April 7th. We are going to talk about unconscious racism this hour and how that can lead to a racial empathy gap and why that matters. Our guest is a freelance writer. She has studied biology and science, and she has a master's degree in public affairs. And we will talk with her about recent scientific studies that show the existence of a racial empathy gap. We'll learn more about unconscious racism and its implications, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Princess Ojukwu, a freelance writer for various publications, including Scientific American, Popular Science, and Pacific Standard. She recently wrote an essay for Aon Ideas and Culture, which was titled, Is Everybody a Racist? The studies keep coming. Unconscious racism is pervasive. It starts early and creates a deadly empathy gap. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for being with us. You start your essay when you attended a protest in Madison after the shooting death of Tony Robinson, a black 19-year-old who was shot and killed by a white police officer, who Tony Robinson lived in the neighborhood where you lived at the time. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I kind of opened the essay talking about my experiences at the protest. Basically, they were all good. For the most part, the protest marched to the county jail, and at the jail there was kind of a break for the protesters with pizza and people hanging out. And my friend and I started talking to this guy. He was a young white man, and, you know, he's someone at the protest. You're like, okay, here's somebody who's, you know, an ally, someone on you know, the set who thinks similar to me. But then he started telling us, the reason we have to fight to, you know, for black men is because cops know that they have more testosterone, and that's why they're going into their neighborhoods and antagonizing them. And we were like, whoa, wait a minute. That's kind of racist. Black men don't have more testosterone, and that doesn't mean they're more violent. And I open the essay with that because I think it's a good example of how people can have really good intentions but still hold racist beliefs that are detrimental.
Yeah, and talk some more about this. Why? What does this type of situation reflect? Why was that so shocking to you or surprising to you to hear this protester say that?
It was really surprising to me because, you know, you assume everyone who is protesting this cause is kind of on the same page, at least on some level. And I think it just blindsided me and my friend as well to know that, oh, actually, there's still people here who hold these beliefs that aren't true, one, and two, are actually actively harming black people. Because it's very othering of black people, like they are, or like we are, this superhuman other, like having more testosterone. In the example of Mike Brown, and I also say this in the essay, Michael Brown in Ferguson, Darren Wilson, the police officer who shot him, described him as a demon, like kind of in these superhuman terms, as able to resist multiple bullet shots, even though he was just a human being.
Yeah.
So,
and you did not say anything to this fellow protester. But how, if you could have done it again, how would you have responded to him?
I don't know if I would have done anything different. It can be kind of exhausting to explain to people sometimes. Yeah. And I guess it would depend on how much energy I felt I wanted to put into explaining why that was wrong and, you know, fielding his reaction if he became angry or something like that. Because
yeah.
I think that's something you think about every time something like this happens.
You also write about there is also the harmful stereotype of the strong black woman. Why is that? Why is that stereotype harmful too?
I think that stereotype's harmful just because it's kind of similar to this like stereotype about black men. And, you know, if you're a strong black woman, then you're supposedly impervious to pain. People feel like it's maybe more okay to hurt you, or you can take things more than other people, or take pain, emotional or physical, more than other people, when it's simply not true. You know, everyone feels pain. Everyone has to deal with it. It doesn't mean just because you're a black woman means you can take more pain than a white woman. But that may lead people to treat you differently if they think that about you. Like, oh, don't worry about you. You'll be okay, you know, instead of having empathy for your pain.
And in fact, it does lead to different treatment. You note various scientific studies. When it comes to medical treatment for pain, whites and blacks are treated differently.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So we know, and there's been numerous studies that have come out about that black people are routinely prescribed less pain medication than white people for similar conditions. And there was actually a study that came out a few days ago from the University of Virginia that surveyed white medical students and residents. And basically, it talked about the thing I just talked about with thinking about biological differences between black and white people. So the more these medical students and residents thought that false biological statements about black people, such as black people's skin is thicker than white people or black people have a stronger immune system than white people, the less likely they were going to prescribe the same pain medication to them as to a white person. And, the findings kind of showed that beliefs about differences between black and white people in terms of biology kind of contributes to this disparity. So it had real consequences to think these things about people.
Yeah. In fact, the subtitle of your piece says that this unconscious racism or these stereotypes, misbeliefs, create a deadly empathy gap. Explain that deadly empathy gap.
So I say deadly because, currently there's a lot of attention being paid to black people being killed by the police. And I go through a few studies that kind of take that to the conclusion. Like if you think a certain group of people don't experience as much pain, you don't feel as much empathy for their pain, I think that means you are less likely to regard their life in the same manner as other people. There's actually one study that I kind of extrapolate to current police situations, and I go over one in which students who were primed with thoughts of death, and so they told them things like, oh, my body would rot after death, or they had to read these things, versus just negative thoughts, where you're like, oh, I'm afraid about doing bad on this test, basically had a greater empathetic brain response when they measured their brain responses to their same race's pain and other race's pain. They found that they were more empathetic to their own race's pain over another race's pain. So it in that study, it kind of shows, or it seems to show, that thinking about death constantly or being primed with thoughts of death makes you more less empathetic to other racist pain. So, I mean, and I bring that on to say, who's thinking about death a lot when they're on the job? And those are police officers, because I think it's very reasonable that you are afraid for your life when you're in the line of duty. And in fact, we see a lot of officers saying, oh, I feared for my life, and that's why I did these things. Yeah. So I think it's a very reasonable extrapolation to make with this study.
We are talking with a guest who is a freelance writer who also has a scientific background, who wrote a recent piece titled, Is Everybody a Racist? And we are talking about the racial empathy gap and why that matters. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about unconscious racism, the empathy gap, and its implications. And we are welcoming your thoughts and your questions on the racial empathy gap and why this matters. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is a freelance writer who has studied science and public affairs, and we are talking with her about her recent essay, Is Everybody a Racist? Our guest is Princess Ujaku, who is a freelance writer for various publications. Her most recent essay is Everybody a Racist? The studies keep coming. Unconscious racism is pervasive. It starts early, and it creates a deadly empathy gap. And so, Princess, we really didn't explain exactly what the racial empathy gap is. Define that for us.
So the racial empathy gap is kind of a phenomenon backed by numerous scientific studies, just showing that people typically see other races as less sensitive to pain than their own race or members of their own race. It's kind of been documented in kind of a bunch of different studies that generally people are more sensitive to pain of members of their own race than other races.
Yeah, explain how those scientific studies, how they, it was interesting, you would watch someone being like their hand being pricked or something?
Yes, so while scientists or researchers were measuring people's brains or their brain activities in various ways, they would watch video clips of hands being pricked. That was one in a few of the studies. So the hands were either they either had white skin or black skin, or as a control, just as a neutral stimulus, they had a hand that had purple skin. And so they measured, there's a specific response in your brain that typically happens when you experience kind of empathy for someone else's pain, when you experience kind of vicariously feeling someone's pain. And so, essentially, people reacted more to the pain of someone's hand who looked to be a member of their own race. Interestingly enough, they also reacted similar to the purple hand, but less to a hand of someone outside their race.
So a white person seeing a white hand being pricked felt that pain more than feeling the pain of a black hand being pricked.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
What about blacks though also felt more pain if they saw the hand of their race being pricked as opposed to another race?
Yes. So it was kind of a reliable in-group study.
Yeah.
When I looked at, so there's one study in particular that used those black and white people that saw that. There's more studies that use white study participants. And there's other studies that kind of use Asian participants. There's studies from not just the U.S., but from Italy and Asia.
Yeah, so can you describe the impact of the racial empathy gap for the Black community?
So I think the impact of the racial empathy gap is just, we already know that Black people are routinely prescribed less pain medicine when they're in need of it, so that's one impact. I argue that another impact is, people generally just feeling less empathetic about our pain in terms of, policing and other issues like that. I guess ultimately, I think it does apply to today's issues and today's pressing issues about the policing of Black people and the disproportionate killing of Black people by police.
Yeah. And talk why how this affects society overall.
So I guess, in my opinion, I just think that it makes society a little less nice. I know that, some people, and maybe less so now, but in recent years, people have talked about, we're moving more towards a colorblind society. I think we are. I think we're getting less racist as time goes on, generally. But I think, I think all these studies just show that even though we're getting better, there's still some work left to be done. You may consciously say or think even, oh, I'm not racist. I think I would, treat everyone equally. Well, even if you think that, you might not be. You might hold these thoughts that are actually hindering you from doing that. And I think, these studies where you're seeing people react differently in their bodies and brains to people outside of their race shows that.
Yeah. So, why? Maybe you didn't title the essay this, but why is the essay titled "Is Everybody a Racist"?
That was not my title, but I think my editors did that because I think all these studies kind of call that into question. There's a lot of stereotypes in the world about people, and I think, even if you think you aren't affected by them, you probably are to some degree, and I think that's kind of what I outline in the piece, so it kind of calls into question, is everyone racist, and how much am I affected by these really pervasive stereotypes that are in our society?
And why should the racial empathy gap be important to more than just the Black community?
I think it's important to everyone to be treated equally. I think if we believe in a fair and just society for everyone, it should be important to everyone that, one group isn't being treated worse than another. I think it should be its own goal.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Princess Ojiaku, who is a freelance writer. She is the writer of the recent essay, Is Everybody a Racist? It's a piece that looks at the racial empathy gap and unconscious racism in our society. And we are welcoming your thoughts, your questions, maybe even your own experiences. Have you experienced unconscious racism? Have you heard these stereotypes or these myths that Black people have more testosterone than other races? Do you think you're more empathetic to your own race? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's take a call from Troy in Muskego. Hello, Troy.
Hello. This reminds me of, I just think it's disgusting that the way our politicians actually create a lot of this thing. And the one way I guess I would articulate this is, you think about wars, and when we fight in a war, you know, especially growing up, you know, with different, you know, my father was a Vietnam vet. So, you know, you grow up and it's, oh, we're against the Chinese in a war, or we're against the, now it's against Middle Eastern people. And when you're in a war, you know, it's, you're fighting over resources. So you're trained to think, you know, you have less empathy for the opponent because you're going, you know, we're fighting for this side and they're the enemy. And then that almost transcends over into like our neighborhood, like in Milwaukee, how we're so segregated that our politicians make us think we're both competing for the resources, but yet this group is milking the system or this group is doing this. So then it's almost like that empathy goes out the window and people start to go have less empathy for that particular race, saying, well, you know, it's either them or me. And I think that's disgusting that our politicians do that, especially our governor and our one of the presidential frontrunners.
Princess, do you think that politicians exacerbate this?
I think some of them do, yes. I would agree with that. I do think that competing for resources is definitely the big issue that people bring up in terms of, drumming up kind of in-group loyalties. And I know that there's one study that I touched on in the essay that kind of wanted to tease apart whether, you know, these racial preferences and empathy were about, just belonging to a group, like, you know, belonging to, for example, a sports team or, I guess, you know, a particular country, like that kind of national allegiance. And race was a little bit different. It's kind of its own particular type of in-group loyalty. But I do think that the heart of it is kind of competing for resources. When people feel threatened that they won't get certain resources because of another group, it does kind of tend to intensify these kind of effects.
So what are some of the historical influences of unconscious racism?
So I think that when people, there was a comment section on my essay, and I think a lot of people kind of thought that, you know, because I lay out all these studies that show that there's these differences in reactions and kind of the body and the brain, they kind of took it to the, kind of an essentialist biology argument meaning that, this is natural to prefer your own group. This is like a biological thing. But I would argue that, you know, these studies are just kind of confirming what we already know from, numerous social science studies, the historical influences of, basically drumming up this allegiance over resources. And, you know, even going all the way back to slavery, like stereotypes about black people were used to make them seem inhuman, like they weren't worthy of, you know, the same rights as other people. And even after slavery, you know, this like fear of scary black people, if they're free, they're going to like take your stuff or, you know, wreak havoc on the country. I think those same influences are still maybe not as intense today, but they're still definitely here. And I think that's what all these studies show.
Thank you, Troy. Let's go to John in Milwaukee next. Hello, John.
Hello. I agree with your comment with the empathy gap. I think that would have to close more so, because you're never going to take care of the racial discrimination problem head on. We've tried to do that and it's not working. But the empathy gap between all that, the racial discrimination, you know, the people who get discriminated against, be it the whites, because there is that reversal discrimination, and the blacks have to appreciate that the help that the other people are offering, the type of empathy that they're showing, by appreciating that and actually seeing that it's not all one-sided. It's not just a racial racial movement against an individual or a race, there's also a lot of help in that coming from, you know, from the people. And if that empathy gap were closed more so, I believe that the tensions would be a lot less, you know, heightened.
Yeah. John, let me ask, follow up with you on, I got lost a little bit there, but you said that there is reverse discrimination as well. What do you mean by that?
Well, I believe that the blacks, with a lot of the help that they get from the white community, and that they may take it, but we don't always see the appreciation from it. And that's kind of the same way as the blacks giving to the whites. They sometimes don't feel that they get appreciated as much for the types of efforts that they do to close that gap.
Yes.
And by both groups understanding that the opposite side is trying to come together, trying to come closer, that line is not so divided as we see it. By understanding that, I think, you know, that everybody would love to see this racial problem go away. So by bringing that empathy gap closer together, I think it would help it on the front end.
Well, John, I appreciate that you call, but I'm still kind of trying to struggle with what you just said. You said that blacks don't appreciate the help that whites give them, and that contributes to the problem. Is that how I understood that?
But that's part of it, yeah. I believe all races have that.
Yeah. What do you think of that, Princess?
I guess I'm kind of confused as well. Could you give an example of what you're talking about, like blacks and whites kind of helping each other? Can you give an example of each?
Yeah, John, what is an example of the help that whites are giving blacks that they're not appreciative of?
Through all the social programs that we give any race, and again, any race, any individual, okay, they should be able to take the help that we give them, be it in the social program, being in the food programs, being whatever governmental programs, social programs that are out there, and help them and use that to their fullest ability, not take advantage of it.
And what about what is the help that blacks are giving whites that whites don't acknowledge?
Well, I think that in this racial tension that we have, that there are a lot of blacks and there are a lot of whites that would like to talk. I don't believe that, like I said, the sides are separated as much as people think they are, and people aren't seeing that empathy from each side. We're understanding it enough to come closer together than we are.
Yeah. Well, was that unconscious racism that we just heard from John, Princess?
I guess I guess I'm just struggling with it because you mentioned social programs for all races, but then you kind of said that black people giving to whites is helping them to talk about it. That seems kind of lopsided to me, I guess. I guess I just don't really know how to address the question quite.
Yeah. And maybe we spent enough time on that. And we will instead check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with our guest, Princess Ujaku, who is a freelance writer. She's also has a scientific background. She's got a degree in biology, a master's, I believe, a master's in public affairs. She wrote this piece, Is Everybody a Racist?, which looks at unconscious racism and the racial empathy gap. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on this racial empathy gap and unconscious racism and how it affects our society. We'll talk more after the break on how we might close this this racial empathy gap, if we can. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about unconscious racism this hour and how that can lead to a racial empathy gap, talking about why this racial empathy gap matters, and we'll talk some about what we can do about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Princess Ojaku, who is a freelance writer, and the author of a piece is Everybody a Racist, which looks at this unconscious racism and the racial empathy gap, including studies that show people are more empathetic to whites than blacks, particularly when it comes to medical treatment for pain. We give whites more pain medication than blacks because of this racial empathy gap. And we're taking your calls, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sheree in Waupun is with us now. Hi, Sheree.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I have to say that last phone call that just took place, I don't know if it was just me, but I felt like I heard unconscious racism all over the phone call because it seemed to me that there was an expectation placed on someone of color if they're receiving a particular type of aid that maybe isn't placed on people of other races, even though he commented that it helps people of other races. So that leads me to kind of believe that when he sees a person of color that, you know, is at the store with food stamps, he may look at them differently than a person that is white at the store with food stamps because he thinks, oh, well, this is just temporary, you know, as opposed to he had made a comment about, like, take advantage of what we're giving you. You know, it was quite highly insulting, to be quite frank with you, especially as a woman who works just like everyone else and works to make ends meet. And it was, I just felt like that phone call smacked of unconscious racism. I don't know if it's just me. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, it's not you, Sheree. I'm not sure how unconscious it was, but maybe it was unconscious. He seemed to, you know, he didn't seem to understand that what he was saying was offensive. And Princess, you didn't quite know how to respond to that.
Oh, that's exactly why I didn't quite know how to respond, because I felt the same way as you, Sheree. I felt like he either had a blind spot about that, and I wasn't sure how to address it, because what he was saying
didn't
quite make sense to me.
Does the empathy gap, the racial empathy gap, extend to people who are suffering because of economic conditions, Princess?
So you mean that
Do we not feel the pain of a black person who happens to be getting some sort of financial aid as much as we, you know, like what Sheree was saying, that we somehow view blacks who are on food stamps, for example, differently than we view whites who are on food stamps?
I would say yes. I didn't really get into any studies concerning that in my essay. But I do know of a couple of studies that say, you know, this is kind of linked to hardship. This effect is kind of linked to people's perceptions of hardship as well as race. So an example of that is if you think someone has gone through a lot of pain or had a hard life, you're also less likely to feel as empathetic for their pain. Interestingly enough, and I guess it might make sense in some cases, you know, you're like, oh, well, they're tough, they can take more pain, which, you know, isn't necessarily true, but, you know, studies have found that that's the case as well.
Thanks, Sheree, for calling, and I'm sorry that you woke up to an offensive call on Wisconsin Public Radio. But it's an example of what we're talking about, Princess. And besides knowing that this exists, that there's unconscious racism that can lead to an empathy gap, what can we do to bridge that gap? What can we do to change things?
I think being aware of it is an important step. I think, you know, a lot of people just aren't aware that, you know, they're either treating people differently or thinking about people differently. I think just kind of challenging yourself like being aware is the first step, and then kind of challenging yourself is the second step. If you find yourself kind of automatically thinking something about a person, like, just ask yourself why, ask yourself, like, I saw this person walking on the street. Why do I feel afraid? Is it because they actually seem like a threat to me, or is it because it's something else?
Princess, your voice is a tiny bit muffled right now, more so than it was before the break. I'm not sure if maybe you can speak directly into your mouthpiece, and we'll hear you a little bit better. But Stephen emails, wouldn't an individual react to and identify with the image that most represents him or herself, no matter what race? I'm not sure what all this proves. I guess he's not seeing why this is... What does it prove that that a white reacts with more empathy to another white, or vice versa?
I think that's a good question, and I think I would say I guess it makes sense that you would react more to someone of your own race, but I guess there's that one study that had the black hands, the white hands, and the purple hands. People, reacted to the purple hands just like they reacted to the hands of their own race. And that's kind of as far from the real, race as you can get. So it's kind of showing that it's not just, people are just going with their own group. It's showing that people actively aren't going with another group. And I would also argue that, besides that, why wouldn't you react to a hand that just has a different skin color? I mean, that could be someone who's a friend, a family member, just someone you know and like. Why wouldn't you react to their pain just because they happen to have a different skin color?
Let me take another call from Raymond in Black Creek. Hello, Raymond.
Yes, hi. So I have one of my I wanted to go back to the, why should we care? And I get it falls back into those last comment also. I think that as soon as we are aware, as soon as you know that it's happening, for example, I think the least form of racism is jokes. And, we say it all the time. As soon as you know that, then it's your responsibility to stop it. It's your responsibility to say something about it, because if not, you're just perpetuating the idea that it's okay to, and hence expands the gap.
I would definitely agree with that. I think, this is something that starts early. In the essay, I talk about children as young as 7 years old tended to rate black children's pain as less than white children's pain. And by age 10, it was a very strong and reliable test result. So, you think that, this is not a super pervasive thing in society, and for thought you would think that, but even in children you see the same bias. So I think it's important to be aware of it, and as soon as you are aware, actively try to work against it. I agree.
Thank you, Raymond, for the call. Tutu in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Tutu.
Hi, good morning. So I'm from different background. I don't know if it is so different, but I'm from Ethiopia. The point that out is the way I grew up, there was no black and white influence. There was no racism because it was nobody. It was just all Ethiopians because there was nobody. But then what I'm trying to say is like much more so not deliberate than unconscious. I guess what shapes us is how we grew up. So if a person is grown up, shaped up how they respond to whatever they're responding into. So I grew up, I was in Chicago for 17 years. Now I moved in Milwaukee. I see more racism here than there. I'm not accusing people, but I see people are not exposed to different cultures so much in Milwaukee compared to Chicago.
Huh. All right. Thank you, Tutu, because we're running kind of short on time. How does racism develop in children, particularly, Princess?
So I'm not quite sure how it develops. I guess how I would say it develops is just, the environment. As was just said, if you grow up in an environment that's a little, that recognizes color, you can influence it deep into you. But it does develop early, as I said before, as young as 7 years old. I think environment plays a huge role in, historical influences in that environment and society.
Well, so what, what is the takeaway, that the most important thing that you wanted readers to take away from your essay, or that you would like listeners to take away from today's discussion?
I would really just want people to, look inside themselves, see how they're reacting to things, and, examine to see if there's a bias. I think that would be the best possible step to making, the whole world a little more empathetic and a little less biased. I think it might be kind of a hard thing to do to start, but I do think just monitoring yourself, checking yourself, making sure that you are acting fairly and treating everyone equitably is a start, and that's what I want people to take away from it. Even if you think you may not be biased, you may be.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Princess Ojiaku is a freelance writer. Her piece, Is Everybody a Racist?, is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you'd like to read it. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production, and to Brianne Chasso for production assistance. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. Coming up in our next hour, it's On the Campaign Trail. We'll have two political media commentators talking about the latest campaign news. And then it's Tell Joy Where to Go Tomorrow. We'll have Gary Knowles join us to tell us where to go in Wisconsin for the month of April. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.